Oh god. I'm not Al Pacino, like, do you know what I mean?
House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe, together with Guinness. Game changed.
Hello, and you are very welcome to season 3 of House of Rugby Ireland, together with Guinness, here on Joe. As you can see, a lot has changed since last season, but we are delighted to have you back here and also delighted to have Guinness on board again for a very exciting season of rugby. For those of you that have been with us last year and for those of you that are new, my name is Emer Considine. I am an Irish and Munster women's rugby player, and I will be joined this season by two fantastic guests that I'm sure you will know from their on-pitch activities. I have Leinster and Ireland's newly retired star, Fergus McFadden, and Ulster and Ireland star Ian Madigan. I also have producer Pat as well, who will be helping us out in the background and giving us all his rugby knowledge and gems along the way. Are you excited to be here, and are you excited to be on the show and on this podcast, boys?
Yeah, massively excited to be on board with House of Rugby. I've looked at a lot of the content over the past few years, so it's kind of cool to be on board with you and Mads now. So hopefully we can make it enjoyable for the listeners.
Ian, are you excited to get your media career off to a start?
Yeah, I think still a bit of a career to have on the pitch yet, but no, I was delighted with the opportunity to come on board when Ferg spoke to me about it. You know, obviously I have a great relationship with him when we played together in Leinster and off the field, and you know, we thought we could put together some interesting shows, and no, really looking forward to it with yourself and Fergus.
Ian, did you have any chats with Dan McFarland beforehand? And as it's obviously difficult, as you're still playing, you know, it's a lot different to you, Fergus, that you're retired now. Was it a bit more challenging to get the go ahead, or was everything okay?
No, look, they were very positive with us. Spoke to the media team there, and I think, you know, the way rugby is at the moment and all that's going on, they were happy with the publicity that, you know, the show is going to get. And I think the more publicity in the game, you know, the better at the moment. And I think they're just hopefully trusting in me that I don't say anything too controversial. And yeah, we'll find out how that goes.
That's it. I'm just looking at you two guys looking in amazing in the new studio setting. Unfortunately, I can't be there. I am doing it virtually through Zoom, just with Six Nations camp and that, where I can't be with you there in studio, but I'm really looking forward to being there in the future. Fergus, tell me a bit about your retirement. You know, newly retired, how are you settling into retirement life?
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. Enjoying it a lot, to be honest. I didn't really know how it was going to feel because with the way it worked out, the contracts that myself and Rob signed on for an extra 3 months after the season was finished, and after we managed to beat Ulster in the final and win that trophy, our contract was rolling on the terms that we kept winning, you know, as in if we got to the final of the Champions Cup, that would be our finish date. So I felt a little bit funny actually yesterday, just looking at the game, thinking that could have been the end for me. So I've been finished around a month now, and I've actually enjoyed it. I've enjoyed not being like on a schedule, you know, in that kind of institutionalized style of work every week, where you've been told where to be, what to wear, reminders on this, that, and the next, and just doing my own training when I want to. Hoping I don't put on the pounds too quickly. So we'll have to see how that goes.
Fergus, in the Guinness Pro 14 final, there's some really nice pictures of you and Rob lifting up the cup. You know, it must have been a great moment for you to be able to lift up the cup with Rob in the end and finish on a high with some really great photos, I suppose.
Yeah, definitely. It was an unbelievable moment, to be honest with you, because I came right to the system with Rob back when I was in school, and then played together, obviously, Leinster and Ireland for the guts of, you know, 13 years every day I was in there anyway. So, you know, to get that privilege and honour from Johnny and Gary that day to lift the trophy on behalf of all 56 players and the whole organisation in the Aviva was, it was an incredible moment and a memory that I'll kind of cherish forever. So I'm disappointed I didn't finish playing in blue because I picked up an injury along the way. But it was worth signing on to get that moment in the Aviva with the boys anyway, definitely.
And Fergus, have those boots well and truly been hung up at this stage?
Well, they were officially hung up forever until I got a call around 10 days ago about getting on board for the Barbarians. So the Barbarians are playing against England in Twickenham next Sunday, this day week. So, I'm on board for that. So it's exciting because I thought, you know, when Leinster lost against Saracens in the quarterfinal, unfortunately, I thought that was me done. I wasn't going to pull the boots out of the bag again, but this is going to be one last go at it. So it should be a bit of fun.
Congratulations on that.
Good job
on
that training.
Get the Clongo socks on.
Get the school socks on. I might go, a Leinster sock and a Clongo sock. I'll see if I get picked first. But it should be good fun. You were in the Babas. How did that go?
Yeah, I did it a few years ago. It was great. It's actually a very special week. You build up a really good bond with the group of players within a very short space of time, and I'm still in contact with a few of them. And now it's a really special week. They pour it on, and wearing those famous colours, it's a great experience.
Ian, how did you find the COVID? I think what I lacked in was not having that schedule, not having that structure every single day. Did you find that hard, or did you enjoy a little bit of a break?
Yeah, I definitely found it hard, and I think what I reverted to was basically building my own schedule so I had something to work off. And we were very lucky when I was in Bristol, obviously, through the lockdown, and they were great for, getting the equipment out to the players. And we had a kind of courtyard out the back of our house where we could set up the gym from the garage. And Brian Byrne, the Leinster and now Bristol hooker, was living with me at the time. So I had a good training partner in him. And we just used to sit down on the Sunday each week and kind of map out our training that we do in the gym out the back. And then we were still able to run in a pitch nearby, and I actually enjoyed large parts of it because, when you're in the team environment, you've got to very much follow the trainings that are being prescribed to you by the strength and conditioning coaches and the head coaches. Whereas when you're going through the lockdown, you can obviously take on board what's being sent out to you, but you can also add in stuff that you think is better suited to you. And that was an element that I certainly felt I enjoyed. And, I was able to work on areas of my game that I felt maybe had fallen by the wayside a small bit in the last few years. And I think giving yourself a different focus and even training in smaller numbers was something that I really enjoyed. Now, I'm happy to be back in with a team now and, back in that team environment. But I think, a change is very healthy and makes you appreciate how special it is when you do come together as a team.
Absolutely. Personally, I absolutely understand it. We're in prep for Six Nations. That's the reason why I'm currently not with you guys in studio. I would love to be there in the new and improved look studio, but I get that it's super exciting to be back in with the team. And Ian, it actually shows, all that hard work coming back and playing so well when you did come back and put on that Ulster jersey. But that is not all that we have so far. We every season have some guests that some Guinness House of Rugby favourites for you. And this year is no different. And we will be joined first off on our first show by Leinster and Irish hooker Sean Cronin. We will be previewing the Guinness Six Nations Games next weekend. And we will be talking about the exciting weekend of rugby that we've had up until then. So Friday night, Ian, it started off with your old team, Bristol. They were down at halftime, but managed to pull out a 32-19 win in the end. Have you been chatting to any of the lads since the game?
Yeah, I was. I was onto a good few of the players and was texting Pat Lamb and saying congratulations. They're obviously they're over the moon. It's huge for Bristol. It's the first big trophy that they've won in I don't know how many years. Getting promoted and relegated for kind of the guts of 10 years and then finally getting into the Premiership and establishing themselves, to be able to get their hands on a trophy like the Challenge Cup is huge. And for all the players involved and the city, I was absolutely delighted to see them winning. And I thought they really deserved it. They've played fantastic rugby throughout the season. They've been a joy to watch, and they were a joy to play with for me personally. And, when you've built up a relationship with guys over 3 years and you see the work that goes in every day, for them to get the fruits in a big trophy like that is fantastic. And, I really did think they deserved it.
Yeah, and there was quite a lot of actually Irish involvement in the backroom team and in the playing team with Bristol this year.
Yeah, so John Muldoon was the defence coach last year, and he's moved in to the forwards coach role now, and seems to have taken to it like a duck to water. You know, he's doing a fantastic job. You know, they've a driving maul that gets, you know, nearly a couple of tries every game, and you know, he was very good as a defence coach last year. You know, Pat, it's an area that Pat would look after himself. So, you know, in a way, Pat would have been a great mentor to him to be able to help him with the trainings. But I think the natural progression for him, having been a forward, and it definitely is probably a step up to go from defence coach to forwards coach. And it's something that's really suited him. And Bristol are very lucky to have him.
Yeah, they are. And the exciting weekend of rugby didn't actually stop there on Friday night. We had a really exciting Champions Cup final yesterday between where Exeter got their first win out of that against a really strong Racing team. Simon Zeebo getting two tries, but some controversial decisions in the end in relation to penalties awarded and not awarded. What do you think about that, Fergus?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, it was an incredible final. I don't think the quality of rugby was the best that out of a game from the Champions Cup. I think there was definitely even Champions Cup pool games, I think, where the quality was better than that. Which is in terms of excitement and for a neutral, for a lot of Irish fans that would have been watching and not really probably caring who was going to win, bar maybe siding with Steenson, Whitten or Zeebo, Ryan, to win their first cup. What a game. Like, it had everything. Like, initially, the first 10 minutes, I was thinking Exeter could... they could beat them in this final by 30 points. Like, they steamrolled them a couple of times in those mauls, and once they got the pick and jams going, it looked like Racing were the Racing they were kind of 10 years ago, where they'd down a couple of scores and they, you know, stick their heads in the sand. Whereas, I just think they were making a lot of stupid mistakes at the start. You know, you had their nine kicking the ball out in the full, some of their backs throwing some passes into touch. But when they got going, I thought they were actually... definitely they played the better rugby. I think they'll look back with a fair bit of regret in the game. You can talk about the refereeing decisions, but I think there was a few refereeing decisions that probably went their way as well at the breakdown. And everyone was talking about that last one where the sub nine for Exeter came on Hidalgo Klein and got over the ball. Was he in the side or was he not? But the balance of the game, I actually think Nigel Owens had a good game. And I think that Racing, from their own mistakes, didn't deserve to win the match. So fair play to Exeter. Just some journey for them. Like, I remember the first time we came across Exeter was under Joe Schmidt in 2012. We played against them, and I remember drew against them. And I was thinking, like, Exeter, I've seen nothing of them. Like, I didn't know any of their players at the time.
Yeah.
And Baxter was the coach at that stage as well. But I do remember after the matches being like incredibly beaten up after it, and I think we only beat them narrowly in both games. I was kind of going, how have I not heard anything about these guys? So that's been the journey for them, really. And it's the most impressive thing that they've done is they've done it the hard way, but they've done it without probably bringing in superstars with loads of money. Like, you look at the Toulon model that worked maybe for those 3 years, bringing in Giddos, Wilkinsons, all these top guys. They've got homegrown guys there in Exeter. It seemed like they have a great identity.
It's an incredible culture there. Yeah. They pride themselves in that physicality. You know, they're the Cornish people, like, from living over in England for a few years, they're a real breed, and they're very proud people. And, you know, it's a beautiful place to live in England. Like, they're very, very lucky to be set up down the
south. Big into racing.
Yeah, exactly.
Surprised you didn't go there instead of Bristol, actually.
I would have, they'd have me.
But you didn't get offered.
But no, look, they're a quality side. And as you said, like, they've been building over the last, you know, 5-10 years. And obviously they've had a great duel with Saracens, which, you know, they've come out on top of now. Mm. But they're a side as well that struggled in Europe for a good few years. You know, they were always top one or two in the Premiership, but wasn't clicking for them in Europe. But it seems that the pennies dropped, and they play a certain style. And I actually thought, like, I was talking to my brother before the game, and I said, I think Exeter will win. I think they're better suited for finals rugby. Mm. And ultimately they were, but as you said, Racing were probably the better side. You know, they've got more to their game.
They played the better rugby.
Yeah.
There's no doubt.
No, they did.
Like, they did. Like, literally what happened, I felt anyway, from watching throughout the whole game was disciplined on Racing's side, completely let them down. So they'd, yeah. they'd give away penalties in the middle of the park, even when they had the ball themselves, stupid stuff. Their players not getting over the ball quick enough with the rucks, they're holding on. And then Simmons would just kick to the corner. You know, yeah. his kicking to the corner has been outstanding. His place kicking has been outstanding.
Yeah.
Kick to the corner. Once they get into the 22, they're almost impossible to stop. Like, as in, if they get, you know, they'll score probably 7 out of 10, you know, set pieces from the line out within your 22.
Yeah.
Like, from the stats that were shown throughout the Champions Cup, it's unbelievably impressive what they do because it's actually so simple. But on the flip side, then, you looked at when Racing actually held the ball. There was, fair enough, a few speculative passes from Finn Russell that came off. But they put together some beautiful play when they yeah. could just hold on to the ball. And even when Exeter held on to the ball in the middle of the park, they never really looked like they were going anywhere, you know?
Yeah.
It was purely the Racing.
Now, Racing looked in control when they were defending Exeter. And then when Racing were defending, with the speed they had, the offloading game, their shape, they looked really, really impressive.
Mm.
But yeah, with that Exeter, you know, when they get into your 22, it's nearly inevitable that they're going to score, you know, 2 out of every 3 times. So it's about not letting them in there.
Mm.
And like so often on the restarts, like Racing were just incredibly frustrating. Like if you're a Racing supporter, watching them, you know, receiving restarts and like the ball bouncing all over the place and then literally just after you've scored, you're back defending your own try line.
Yeah,
you know, like it's, they just shot themselves in the foot a few times.
The Zeebo's second try at the start of the second half was just, that summed their day up. So it was outstanding.
Yeah.
For them to get into that position. And then, unlike Exeter, they actually went high-risk play, went out to Finn Russell, who threw a lovely pass to Zeebo, who scores in the corner. Go back, you're like, oh, geez, they're back in the game here. You know, I think they're 2 points down. And off the kickoff, knock it on straight away.
Yeah.
And then error. And Exeter pick and go. I think it was another pick and go try again. Score it.
No, like it's tough. Like it's for the pack there, like, you know, the pack of ground out like a fantastic try, like they're probably absolutely gassed.
Yeah.
You know, they actually get it right at the restart and they look out and they're trundling in behind
the ball. Can you imagine being a Racing coach? As in, like, it literally the roller coaster of emotions that they must go on weekly. Like, I'd say that a lot of them have heart problems. Like, because it's, you know, you're up so high. I would say the Zeebo try and the Russell pass that actually hits, or as the Russell pass, the interception at the start of the second half.
But even like the
very
like,
frustrating.
They're weighing up subbing off the 9 after like 10, 15 minutes. Like the roller coaster of that. And then you can see him talking to Mash now going, well, I'm actually going to leave him on for another few minutes and see if he can get it right. But the other thing as well, you don't know how much, because obviously they had a good few cases. You know, the slow start.
Yeah, true.
How much was their preparation affected over the last few weeks?
Yeah.
That could have been a factor. You know, it's not really something you can measure, but it definitely
In relation to you were saying there about the mistakes that they kept making, Racing kept making those mistakes, and it's just, so you don't know what team is going to come out, whether they'll try those things and sometimes they'll work, but then other times they don't. And that Finn Russell intercept try, you know, he's capable of throwing amazing passes like the one that he set out for Zeebo out in the wing, but then there's the risk involved in it. Like, how important is, I suppose, that 10's influence? And like, Finn Russell, could he have done much more in the game? You know, there's a lot of criticism about how he could have gone for that drop goal in the end, and as a 10, you know, what should you expect from someone like Finn Russell?
Yeah, I think with Finn, you got to take the good with the bad. You know, like, they're probably not getting into the final. You know, moment of magic he produced throughout the group stages, like that bit of skill against Munster was incredible.
Mm.
The chip, you know, to have the bravery to go for that chip at the end of the Saracens game and it pulls off was, you know, incredible piece of skill. The pass to Zeebo was, you know, an absolute moment of magic in the final. And like, you can't take that good and then complain about him when it doesn't come off, because it is high risk. And you know, what he's doing is right at the high end. The intercept pass,
I think it suits Racing's philosophy, because they're probably a more structured and hard-working French team than a lot of them, but they still play that loose style, and Russell being their 10 just suits it, like, you know.
Yeah, and like, in his defence, for the intercept try, you know, the space is there. He's seen the space. He probably hasn't got a perfect grip of the pass, you know, and delivered the pass that he knows that he could have. It's ended up short, but can he get it over? No. Yeah, he probably can, but he didn't in that instance. But there's other out halves that don't even have that pass within their armory, you know, or they don't see where the space is. Like, he's unbelievable the way he views it.
I love the way Mads is completely defending him here, because this is a lot of the stuff that he did, Mads was doing on a weekly basis.
Yeah, yeah, it's going through your head at the same time. But look, when it pulls off... When it works, and you'll get all the glory for it. And when it doesn't, you'll get absolutely scrutinised. So we're going to leave part one there. After, in part two, we're going to have Sean Cronin, and we're going to chat about the Guinness Six Nations.
House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe, together with Guinness. Game changed.
It's a pleasure to have Sean Cronin here with us on our first show, House of Rugby, our first guest. Welcome, Nuggie.
Thanks very much, guys. It's a pleasure to be here for the opening show of the series, and really looking forward to the chat.
Well, it's ironic because I think, like, we know each other so well, but the last time we hung out was probably quite a while ago now. Between you going over to Bordeaux and Bristol and now Ulster, to think we're thick as thieves. The days we're in Leinster and Ireland and stuff. It's funny we have to be on a podcast to catch up properly.
I know. Long gone are the days where you could just have coffees and you know, soak it up for a few hours after training. A lot's changed for you two boys over the last few years with the babies arriving and whatnot.
Yeah, definitely. I think I don't know how you feel, Nuggie, but like I felt, and you had kids before I did playing rugby as well. But I found it a pretty big adjustment, like in terms of like. Professional rugby on its own is tricky for yourself and I, you know, your wife being on the roller coaster with you, but once a kid arrives into the mix, the old spare time goes out the window in terms of going for coffees and lunches and all the rest. How have you found that adjustment from earlier on in your career when you had like more free time and stuff?
Yeah, I suppose last change where you could spend 3 hours down the local coffee shop shooting the breeze, like it is tough, and I suppose it's just about the adjustment when the kids come along, and I suppose it just brings another focus to your life, really. You understand where I'm coming from with that, I suppose. But look, it's great to have them involved, and I know with the whole COVID situation at the moment, it's tough. They obviously can't go to games now. But it's great to have them involved, and the two boys love their Leinster jerseys. They were actually in Lifestyle Sports the other day with Claire looking at, and Killian said they were looking at Irish jerseys, and Killian said we don't buy Irish jerseys anymore, mommy. Daddy doesn't play for them.
Brilliant. So that's daddy's boy.
When Killian's cutting you from the squad, it's not a good situation to be in.
It's actually funny you say that, because you know, Freddie, since he started to talk and all the rest, he understands what's going on. My oldest son, who's two, you know, the past few months when I'd go off in the morning or whatever, or come back, my wife would say, oh, daddy was at work, daddy was playing rugby, and he would have seen some of the matches when I was on TV. Whereas now, obviously, I'm retired, you know, completely finished. And when I leave the house sometimes and come back, he goes, oh, daddy was playing rugby. No, daddy's done. daddy's finished. But, we were talking before the show, Mads, about some things we could touch on with Nuggie, and obviously you having the experiences in other different environments. I think you had mentioned about like being Leinster through and through, and then moving to different clubs and ending up in Ulster. Like, how did you find that for yourself in terms of, obviously, the first time you played us was second game back, was it, in the Aviva Stadium?
Yeah, like for me, you know, growing up, supported Leinster and coming through the academies and whatnot, like on a development contract, and then breaking through into the first team, you know, it was dream come true stuff. You know, getting to play with, you know, the guys you worship growing up, the likes of Draco and stuff like that. It was a dream come true, and was lucky enough to share some great memories with you two guys playing for Leinster. So moving away was, you know, was a big decision for me. And I remember when I moved to Bordeaux and they were in the Champions Cup, I remember really hoping that they wouldn't draw Leinster in the group stages, because I just didn't feel like I was ready to, you know, play against Leinster. And it's funny how time has gone on now. I've, you know, obviously played in Bristol for a few years and now at Ulster. I actually relished playing against Leinster, and it was something that really excited me which I suppose is probably maybe a bit of maturity, but also kind of how your career is, has developed over the years. But yeah, it was very weird going out against you guys in that regular season game at the end of last season, and then obviously playing you in the final. But yeah, I suppose, how did you find it, Nuggie, when you were obviously you played with Munster and Connacht, and then joining Leinster and having to play against those clubs?
I suppose I had a slightly different route in terms of I was involved with Munster in the academy and growing up and playing club rugby down there, and then it was. Like you said, it was a big decision for me to move to Connacht at the time. I thought it was a real big opportunity to go get some top level pro rugby at the time, and it was a very tough decision. Then going up against Munster, going back down to Tone Park after that was very strange. And I did 3 years there, and when I moved to Leinster, but I suppose, like you said, over time, it turned out to be less of a weird experience going down. And I suppose the fact that we played each other every year as well. Yeah, plenty of abuse when I went back to Connacht anyway after I joined Leinster. And we got rolled
over. Your father was probably screaming at you. We went down to Thomond for the first few times.
Yeah, well, he was, he was, he had his Munster jersey on. We turned him eventually. But it was strange. And I suppose, like you said, though, something over time that it just got a little bit less weird over
yeah,
time.
For me, like it was definitely surreal, you know, coming up against your old club. And a moment that stands out for me enough, like when obviously we lost the final, I was, you know, gutted to lose. And we were there, we stayed out on the pitch, and yourself and Rob came up to lift the trophy. And it just was just a really kind of weird moment when, you know, in past times I would have been on the podium potentially with you guys. But I'll never forget when Fergie lifted up the trophy, and he's got a big rug of of his stomach.
For anyone that didn't see the front of the Irish Independent Photo, yes, I do have a big
rug. I think James Tracy was in behind you helping.
My memory from it was, so myself and Rob got given the honour from Gary and Johnny on the day to lift the trophy, which was incredible and almost a bit embarrassing, the fact that we didn't play on the day and everything. But we went up anyway, and as bizarre as it was with no one in the crowd, there's obviously two of us lifting the trophy, like one on each side, so it's not a normal kind of lift, you're not doing it on your own. So what we did was me and Rob both went up with two hands, and James Tracy, so he says afterwards, was just a bit excited, and he felt like he wanted to try, like, lift me with it or something. But he managed to pull my top up like this. Like, one of my nipples was pretty much poking out of my top. And I remember, like, pulling my top down, and we're still, like, you know, singing Championne and all this kind of stuff. And then I looked out, because obviously there's no one in the crowd, so I was looking at a few of the Ulster players, and you caught my eye. And I could see you smiling up at me, and I was going, I'm not going to hear the end of this now when Mads
gets my ear about it. I remember smiling at the time, and then very quickly realising, geez, if any of the Ulster boys look over at me here and see me smiling with you guys lifting the trophy, they won't understand what's going on. But it was just one of those moments where, you know, it was just surreal, I suppose.
It was proper Austin Powers stuff.
Yeah, I didn't notice it at the time, but when I came in, I had about 25 WhatsApp messages, and they were all of you lifting a trophy with half your stomach hanging out. Like,
I know, yeah.
A few lads said that, you were still in pretty good nick anyway. So.
Through the rug, you just about see it. Speaking of funny moments, we do have one funny clip here that we're going to throw up. Nuggie, they might talk you through it. I was actually playing in the game. It was against the one against the Cheetahs earlier on in the season. I'm not sure if we have the clip here that we can put it up to talk through. But I remember from the game though, it was literally the wettest day I've ever played rugby, and you can see we're drowned there, and it's 73 minutes in, and we're winning by 30 points. Can you talk us through exactly what's going through your head, you know? Because it's a bit of a question for what happens next moment.
See, the scrum was going so well that day. I just wanted to try and get a scrum there in the five. As you can see, it's a desperate moment for myself there when you're in that and that's something like that. You can't even see the conditions on the pitch there.
It was by far the worst weather I've ever played in my life. But I specifically remember, like, our players laughing, the Cheetahs players laughing, and the fans in the crowd are also drowning.
I'm surprised you didn't blame the touch judge.
You know it's bad when I was talking to my mother after the game, and usually, you know, you could have the most shocking game of your life, and she'd always, you know, you were great, you did so well, you did this, you. But when she brought that up and said that it didn't look great, I knew I was in big, big shit. So.
The mothers can always give it a positive spin. Have you had ever any situations like that you could draw on with that? I remember for me, anyway, I had one. The game hadn't even started, so we're playing an A game against England. It was in 2014 before the Six Nations. And it was in Gloucester, and we're walking out, and there was mascots to walk out with us, you know. And obviously the mascots were kids, and most of them were up to the lads' hips, and you hold their hands to walk out. There's this kind of guy standing beside me, and kind of wondering where my mascot's gone, you know. And but he's just kind of nodding at me as if like he's, and I'm going, surely this guy's not my mascot. Like he was an inch smaller than me, I'd say, genuinely. But obviously then the awkward situation was, so he obviously was just big for his age, but I have to walk out hand in hand. So it just looks like two men are walking out.
Oh my God.
The mascots and the. But I remember, I think the game was on some channel. I can't remember what it was on. Could have been on TV3 or something. And the camera goes across during Ireland's call, and you pretty much couldn't see my face. Like, you could see my eyes over the top, but I'm trying to keep the smile off my face.
You can see the headband over the top.
Yeah. You can see the headband, yeah, just about. But not my finest moment, that one.
Yeah, I had a tricky enough one when I first joined Bordeaux. And it was just a friendly game. It was like our first friendly game before the league started, and you boys have both played on the pitch in Bordeaux. It's a really old surface, so kind of like spongy, and I was kicking before the game and literally could not kick snow off a rope. Like, it was just one of those days, just couldn't get it right, couldn't figure out what I was doing wrong. And so the warm-up ended, and like, you know, you've got like 3 or 4 minutes to go into the change room, get your jersey on, and then head back out. And I was like, right, my kicking was in a bad spot. I was like, I'll keep kicking for another few kicks, you know, another two or three, get it right, and then head in. So I'm taking, you know, two or three kicks. It's still going terribly. Like, it drifted on to, like, you know, 8, 9, 10 kicks. And usually you'd have a kicking coach there telling you, like, right, you need to head in. So anyway, eventually I made the trip back into the dressing room. Now, in Bordeaux,
it's a
crazy long tunnel. It's like,
it's a kilometre long.
Yeah, it feels like it's a kilometre long. Yeah. So anyway, I'm making my way back in the tunnel, and the team are coming out the tunnel. They're already, like, ready to go. I remember, like, catching eyes.
This is your typical mad stuff now, right?
Yeah. catching eyes with the captain. And, like, you know yourself, you get into the change room, like, you've a fair few things to get sorted before you head back out. So I run back up to the change room, get the boots on, you know, get your jersey on, shoulder strapping, and then I run back out the tunnel. And both teams are already set up and, like, waiting for me. And, like, in France, they loved a bit of fanfare and stuff. And it was almost like it was set up that the new signing was coming out.
You were starting the game.
Starting the game, okay. Yeah. And I got a bit of an ovation from the crowd, and, like, never lived it down with the team. Like, they were, like, basically saying that I'd set it up, like.
Yeah. It wouldn't be like you. Yeah.
Set up after seeing you crying on TV, playing France and stuff. Like, yeah. This guy loves the limelight.
That sounds like a pretty reasonable, embarrassing situation, lads. I'm sure there's a few more there we could have pulled out.
It could have been far worse.
Making yourself sound great here. Get back onto the small bit of the rugby here, just from the weekend, especially just with the final. Nuggie, like, what did you think of the Exeter Racing game? Bart, just obviously being an incredible final. What was your view on it? Did you watch the whole thing, or, like, what did you think about the results?
Yeah, I watched it yesterday. Incredible game of rugby from start to finish, really. I suppose Racing probably be kicking themselves. Just some big errors at key moments in the game, instead of maybe a small bit lack of control. Exeter are very clinical. We've seen throughout the year when they get into an opposition 22, they're always scoring. But I suppose we saw Finn Russell, both sides of what he brings. He can be, you know, a wizard at times and set up some unbelievable scores. But then the intercept, and then the little grubber through, and maybe a bit more composure at that key time.
Kind of didn't
of the game.
Feel like a final or something, like at the start of it. And obviously, there's no crowd. Obviously, the atmosphere at finals is historically so much better than all of the knockout and pool stage games. But it was something about the start of the game, it just didn't feel like it, because there were so many basic errors. You know, the way you get to the two best teams in the comp get to the final, like, those basics are usually so spot on.
Yeah.
And they kind of weren't from both sides, I thought, anyway. Like, even See, the scrum half getting the penalty at the start of the game. Scrum half misses touch. Then I think Shivansi throws a ball into touch. Like these kind of errors, and that happened even. Like there was some poor errors from Exeter throughout the game. I thought the standard of the game, obviously a great watch. Yeah. The standard of the game was
no. It was some of the mistakes you wouldn't usually see at that high level. You know, like the Racing Nine was lucky to stay on for, you know, even to make it to half time. He just had one of those games where everything he touched wasn't working out. Like he tried a no-look pass, didn't work out. The penalty touch, as you said. And you could see like Machinot getting warmed up on the sideline. It would have been a big call, but, you know.
I was kind of laughing when I saw that, that they were warming Machinot up, and I could see the coach talking in his ear, and I'd say he was just saying, you know, try not to be as shit as Teddy.
Just don't do what he's doing. Yeah. Please don't do what he's doing.
Yeah.
But I know. That seemed, like crazy. But then your man started to get into the game a small bit more.
Between him and Russell together, like, you know, it was just a poor combo for the... And I know Russell had some great moments, as you said, you know, the lovely pass to Zeebo. He flung some lovely passes in the second half as well, but like, and I know you say you got to take the good with the bad with someone like him, but you'd hope in a final that he might rein it in that tiny bit more. Do you know what I mean?
But even for Exeter's first try, that came from it was kicked into touch, and Finn Russell tried the quick throw across the pitch to, I can't remember who got it, but then Exeter turned him over. Great kick chase by Exeter, and then into the corner, and that was the first 7%. All the Exeter scores came from, you know, errors or mistakes made by
the restarts, receipts that Racing took. Like they barely took one clean, and like it wasn't like it was even really like accurate high kicks where the winger's getting up and it's a real competition. There was no real pressure on them. They just looked disorganised, and it's basic things like that in a final that you can't give a team like Exeter access into your 22 straight away after score.
So clinical.
You know, every time they get in there, they're coming away with points, and ultimately, like, that's what it came down to.
Mm. In a weird way, it kind of made the final more exciting because you kind of knew Racing were shambles at times, but they had the ability to win that game. Like, at the end, when Klassen's went through, like, he twists his body the other way, he's scoring, you know?
Yeah, that was, you know, Hidalgo Klein got on the ball, but from what I saw, Exeter player didn't roll away.
Yeah.
And that didn't allow the Racing players the entry in to clean out Klassen's. So I thought it was a tough call. I thought it potentially could have been a penalty for Racing.
Yeah, same.
Because
the guy that tackled them was on the wrong side. So their cleaner couldn't get through over the top. Like, really, like, it's great grit there by Exeter. And it kind of summed them up, that kind of moment. But in terms of legality, like, there's no way Hidalgo Klein went through the gate there. In terms of, like, back around and through the gate of the ruck, he came directly in from the side.
It's a funny one. Like, when someone's in the act of scoring and it's in the try line area, you know, there's so much stuff going on. Yeah. Like, you could nearly argue as well that it was in the act of scoring and it could have been a Racing 5 metre scrum that he's, you know, in theory held him up.
Yeah, it was a tough one for Nigel Owens, who actually thought, bar the calamity at the end with the time with the clock and all that. I thought he had a good game, and from recent, he let the game flow with a reason.
Yeah, no, he did. I thought he had a very good game. Yeah. You know, like all refs, you're going to miss one or two things, but I thought he was very fair to both sides, let it flow really well. And even like the bit of a mess at the end, like they've ended up with the right decision. Like the clock was up, you know, and you would have hated for like that to have continued and, let's say, Racing at the restart back and score, like that would have been a shambles. Yeah. So
I remember the couple of decisions that were made in 2014, but the three of us were involved in that game over in France, and we were the super subs for that whole campaign, where three of us were subbing for Joe Schmidt's Ireland, and it was an unbelievable, like, I would have loved to have started, but I was just delighted to have been in the squad for that campaign. I thought it was a really, really enjoyable campaign, and the finish was a really exciting one, obviously, over in Stade de France to do that to them. But there was some decisions in that game that went Ireland's way as well. Like, at the end, you had the pylon, which was deemed a maul. But like,
I don't think you'd get away with that.
Oh, you wouldn't get away with that now. Who was reffing that day, actually? Do you remember? Because I was thinking it wasn't Owens, was it?
The Steve something. He was a New Zealander. Because I remember he went, was not the game where they went upstairs for the potential forward pass? From
the one where Dave came in and hit your man and yeah. threw it forward, yeah, yeah. There was decisions in that game as well. I think on the bearing of the full game, Exeter and Racing, like, Exeter deserved to win the match. But there was a decision or two there where you could go, you know, I'm sure Racing fans are going, they got to feel, Steve Roach, you sure?
No,
he's Steve Walsh.
Steve Roach. Steve Roach. He's a cyclist, I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
But that's an example of a day where it went our way. But what a memory that was. I remember on the field. I don't think I've ever like felt so relieved on a pitch for the final whistle to come.
Well, that was our first big win for Ireland, wasn't it? You know, that we'd been involved in. You know, we weren't around in. I got my first cap in 2009, but it was the November after they'd won the Grand Slam. Yeah. And I think Joe had come in 2013. Mm. That was when we lost to the All Blacks in that game. And that was his first Six Nations.
For us coming on as well, like, you're coming on protecting a lead.
Oh, you're coming on panicking. You're coming on. Don't be the person that messes this up for everyone.
It's massive pressure cooker environment. And that was a great, I'll always remember that because, I thought it was our first big win with Ireland championship in the Stade de France. You know, you couldn't have got much better, and it went right down to the wire with the potential forward pass. And
but the reason I'm actually bringing it up as well is because obviously Ireland could be battling it out for the championship in Stade de France in 2 weeks' time if they get 5 points against Italy. And I think we talk about a pressure cooker there, and particularly like coming off the bench, but that's largely because of the fans there. You know, there's 80,000 people in that, and the French are so loud. Like, for the Irish lads not to have that, and I don't want to skip past Italy, as it's going to be, I'd like to think we're going to get 5 points there, but if we can do that, go over to, like, that's a massive positive for I think this Irish team going over to the fact that there will be no crowd there.
It would be very strange, like Stade de France, even the fact that you are playing away from home, it's an incredible stadium to play in, and what an atmosphere. But it'll be very strange, and like you said, Italy at home is the first game up, and the guys will be aiming for 5 points there, and then it'll all come down to that final game. So but France will be, if they win their next game, they'll be going for the Grand Slam. So it'll be very interesting to see how it plays out.
There's a good chance, that French game, there's a high chance it will be a loose game, it'll be a high scoring game. So if Ireland are to win it, there's a high possibility that it could well be four tries.
Yeah, potentially.
So it could tee up nicely, but it'd be a huge game if France are going for the Grand Slam. It'd be a great one to watch.
Definitely. With the current season, Nug, like, obviously, I was in there for the couple of days after we lost against Saracens, and then that was me done. But how did you find, like, and even with the boys as well, like, pressing the reset button, kind of rolling straight into next season? Because obviously every club's had to do that. Like, there hasn't been a period of, like, off time. And just, you know, for people that aren't professional rugby players or don't know much about it, like, to press that reset button and have time off is actually, it's huge, and it's key for, I think, keeping motivation levels high. You know, your body obviously staying in one piece, the fact you're not playing right through. I think it'll be interesting to see how guys manage to cope getting right through the season now, because there's no real break. I know that you didn't have a game last weekend, and there's probably not one now for another week, is there not, with Leinster?
No, we've got next Friday night
against
Zebre, but like you said, there's no break now. I think it's 10 weeks consecutively. So and in terms of, I suppose, after the Saracens game, that was technically the season done, and like you said, yourself and Rob retired and finished up. And I suppose the way the coach has really, drilled it into us was that it was the season start. It's just one big season, you know. And I know that we're rolling into the next one now. And like I said, there's little break. There's a huge amount of rugby, so it's massively important to try and keep as many guys on the training field and as fit. We've obviously lost 20 players, I think, to Irish camp. So it's going to be a tough testing few weeks for Leinster, from a personal point of view, that we've a lot of new guys, young guys coming in now and getting an opportunity to play.
Definitely, because I think, like, how many players have Leinster lost? Is it 16 to Ireland?
No, I think it's 20.
Is it 20?
Yeah, yeah.
That's the most ever, really.
Yeah, and I think the scary thing is that in years gone by, you had, I suppose, the young guys were the guys that were staying back and they were keeping the show on the road, so to speak. But now you got, like, the young guys are like Caelan Darris and Ronan Kelleher and all these guys are, they're in Irish camp now. So it's even the younger crop coming through in Leinster who are going to be getting their chance to put their foot forward in the weeks coming up.
Yeah, I know. How do Ulster manage that, Mads? How have you noticed them managing? Because obviously, well, Ulster wouldn't lose as many as Leinster, but like, what is their management with that in terms of players leaving and coming in and out of the environment?
Yeah, it's generally pretty seamless from what I've seen. You know, it's you know, yourself as well. When you're in a professional environment, you're just dealing with what you've got. So even for what's going on at the moment with, you know, the COVID restrictions. So we've had 2 weeks where we've been massively disrupted with COVID cases, and it's not necessarily just the, you know, one or two cases you have. You could lose 8 or 9 guys on a given week if those 2 guys have had close contacts. So it is, you know, very disruptive, and you can also lose training days. So if you find out on a Monday or a Tuesday that these cases have come in, you mightn't be able to come back in until the Thursday or the Friday. You might only have one training session before a game. So similar with not having internationals around, you just deal with what you've got. And I think generally professional environments are very good at that. You know, it's ultimately what team you're putting out, that's what's on show. And look, it's an exciting time for us up in Ulster. We've, you know, won our first 2 games. We've Dragons at home next Sunday, and, you know, hopefully another home win and we can be 3 from 3.
Yeah. Nogi, thanks a million for coming on the first show.
Yeah, thanks a million.
With me and Mads, it was a pleasure having you on. And
thanks, lads.
Best of luck for the new season as well.
Thanks very much.
House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe, together with Guinness. Game changed.
Okay, and for last orders, there is no better place to start than the upcoming Guinness Six Nations at the weekend against Italy. So there has been lots of discussions about the selection, lots of discussions about COVID, lots of members injured. There's been so much talking points ahead of this game, this long-awaited return to rugby that we are so excited about. So, Ian, first up, Ireland need a bonus point win to still be in with the chance of winning this championship.
Yeah, it's crucial to, you know, gather momentum very quickly going into this game, having been apart for as long as they have. And I personally think they are suited to, you know, playing the Italians, because we've had their number for the last, you know, few years, and, you know, you'd have to be confident that if they do play well, that they could get, four tries and then roll into the English game, you know, and everything could be all to play for there and win a trophy.
Or the French game.
French game, sorry.
You've obviously been keeping an eye on the fixtures since you're not in Scotland.
England have Italy next again, so an equally important
England game didn't
for
go
Ireland.
So
yes,
well.
You're right, Ian.
But the Italy game is, I agree with Mads there, like, we definitely have had their number the last few years, and you'd kind of just expect Ireland to get 5 points without, you know, belittling Italy. I think that Ireland should be, you know, get 5 points there, hopefully. And then if they can, they'd probably be in a position where they'd have to get another 5 points against France in Paris. And, you know, judging by what the French pulled out of the bag against England in Paris, like, when they're in the mood over there, they're quite hard to stop. So it'll be a huge challenge, but it's an exciting one. I think for the group of players that's been pulled together, and there's an awful lot of guys from all the 4 provinces that have been given fresh opportunities and rewarded for good performances with provinces. They I'm sure they just want to get stuck into a game and are hoping to get picked.
Yeah, and that's a question. Like, in the past, Italy was always seen as the one that you could, you know, rest the usual starters and that you could give those guys, like those guys that have been showing in their provinces in the last while, those chances. But I suppose, given the situation, given the current climate that we're in, and as you said, looking for a 5-point win against France, like getting that bonus point, will that be the same? Like, so we're going back to selection here. Will it be that inexperienced guys that are getting their first opportunity and getting some of those first caps, or because the team haven't played together in so long, what are we thinking reselection?
I reckon Andy's probably going to reward the guys who've played the best, because Ireland haven't played together for so long. In my opinion, that would be probably the best thing to do, because the guys will, they've been training together now for, you know, going on a week, is it 10 days or longer?
Yeah, it's only a short period of time.
It's a short enough period of time, but I'm sure he'd like to reward the guys that did well with Ireland under him as well, and that have been doing well with Ireland for years, and maybe might not have gotten as much game time with their provinces. So I'm sure it'll be a mixed bag of some fresh faces and then definitely some seasoned campaigners.
Yeah, I think what could happen is, like, you've got, you know, guys coming in like Jameson Gibson-Park, James Lowe, that are going to be most likely, in my opinion, getting their first cap. But it's not that, you know, it's some young guy coming in who might get a go against Italy, but then you mightn't see him the following week. These are guys that we could foreseeably see them in the 23 going forward now for Ireland, if they go well. And I think we'll probably see them play against Italy. And if they go well, then they could get rewarded again against France.
Yeah, maybe. I suppose there's two sides to that argument, because then you go, if you want to hit the ground running going over to Paris, do you want to give the guys game time that you want to play over there as well? But then you run the risk of guys picking up niggles and knocks. I don't know. It's just going to be an interesting one. I agree with you, though. I think given a couple of guys maybe that haven't had opportunities before, a chance against Italy and Dublin would be a nice start.
Yeah, and going back to that, there is quite a few question marks. Obviously, there's suspensions, there's injuries, and the squad has actually changed quite a bit from last Tuesday when they announced it. But there's question marks over a few positions, I suppose, namely the back row, second row, who's going to be the partnership there. And in relation to the back three, you know, with Larmour injured, I think he was looking there to be maybe the starting fullback. There's quite a lot of inexperience in that, but guys that have played well. So, like, out of Conway, Daly, like, Henshaw has experience playing at 15. You've got Keenan there, who's played phenomenally for Leinster. And you've got Stockdale, who played quite a bit of his rugby late this season at fullback and then moved back to the wing. What do we think the back three combination might look like, or who is the best suited at fullback there?
Yeah, I think that Hugo Keenan deserves a chance. Definitely from the way he's played for...
At fullback and not on the wing.
Yeah, at fullback. I think the opportunity now has to present itself because, you know, Jordan was playing outstandingly well at fullback and unfortunately picked up the injury over against Treviso, which is going to keep him out for quite a while. So, yeah, I think give Hugo, you know, reward him for how well he's played. And then you've obviously got a choice of Daly, Conway or Stockdale. I don't think James Lowe is qualified just yet. To play for Ireland, isn't he not?
I think it's November.
Exactly. It's November, It's another couple of weeks. So, yeah, I mean, Shane Daly's done brilliantly well for Munster as well, and he's actually played a fair bit of fullback. But, I mean, I think Andy might go Stockdale on the left and Conway on the right. I think with Keenan at fullback there, that's a really strong combination. So,
And Ian, what about you? You've experienced playing with Stockdale both at fullback and as a winger. Like, what is the difference of him being at fullback? Like, people spoke about that, the boot, he gets to show off that left boot quite a bit more in that fullback position. But I suppose you played with him. What do you think he's more suited as a winger, as a fullback?
Yeah, obviously a very gifted guy. You know, you'd have him, you know, if you have him on the left wing, you're going to try and use him as much as possible. But it's great having a full back and his left foot, for me in particular, when you're exiting your own half, being able to just get the ball out to him and he can kick the ball, you know, 60, 70 metres down the field. It's lovely having him there.
It's great having a left-footed kicking option in the box as well.
Beautiful. Like,
you know, that's what, like, you know, Rob was a mainstay in the team for over 10 years and he had the whole package, but the fact that he had a left boot as well was such a huge asset to him. Because I think it's quite a rare, you know, not every backline has someone with a good left boot.
No.
He has an extremely good left stock to.
It's funny, having a good kicking game, having a good right footer and a good left footer, it then actually opens up much more running opportunities for you. You know, it's not necessarily, oh, we've got this left footer guy, let's just use him to kick the ball loads. Mm. Teams have then got to set up with their back three differently, you know, keeping their fullback back, one of their wingers back, and then suddenly, instead of attacking against, you know, a four-up defence with the fullback closing early because they don't think you're going to kick because you don't have a left footer, suddenly you're attacking against a three-and-a-half and it's much easier to get an edge. You then make 20 yards, your scrum half gets the ruck and then booms it down the pitch. You know, it's just gives you another option and a different way of playing.
Yeah, even I like remember doing footage on Ulster, you guys, just over the past while and over the past few years, and since Stockdale went in, if I was picked on the wing, you know, I knew that he's such a cannon of a left boot that you do have to be much more aware of that spacing behind you, because a right footer is not going to be able to get it there as quickly.
No.
So yeah, just a great asset to for Ireland to be able to have now that Rob is kind of out of the fold there.
Yeah.
And I suppose the same, there's such depth in the back row. And obviously with the second row, with, I suppose, Henderson being suspended, he's still suspended for the game, isn't he? And Baird been ruled out as injured. So there's, you know, that original squad that was named, it's looking a lot different. And then that back row is so competitive. Like, you've got CJ, you've obviously going to be Munster biased here with Peter Manny, CJ Byrne. But, you know, then there's Van der Fleer, Doris, Will Connors, who's had a phenomenal few games, and rightly so, you know, could earn his first cap. So, you know, the competition there in the forwards, it's, you know, it's there in the back line, but it's also there in the forwards as well. What, you know, who do you think is going to be your combination for that one, Fergus?
For the second rows and back rows?
Second and back row, yeah.
I don't know. I think, well, you're going to obviously definitely start James Ryan.
He's a definite. I suppose it's just who partners him.
I think he's going to start, and then I mean, you have some other really nice options of between Quinn Roon, Alton Delan. Like, they're both really good players to put in there, and I think any of the opportunities either of those guys have gotten over the past few years, particularly under Joe Schmidt, have done really well. So I think one of them with Ryan would be, you know, still a really strong option. I think in the back row, it's just so competitive. It's very hard to pick who would start in each position, because the likes of CJ and Peter have done so well for years under Joe Schmidt. And then obviously when Andy came in as defence coach, like, they would know Andy so well from Ireland and the Lions tour. So you'd have to think those guys would probably be in pole position to keep their spots. But who knows? Because, you know, Caelan Doris, he was the young player of the year for I think he was the Zurich young player of the year, was announced yesterday, and deservedly so. So he could start at 8 or 6 as well. And then you've got one of Josh or Will Connors as a 7. So it's just, I mean, the competition is, it's pretty
incredible.
And then
you're not even talking about Jack Conan there. You know, there's so many, the depth in the back row
Jack, how did I forget about Jack? Jack.
I'm surprised it's fell a Leinster man.
But that's the thing though, because the weird thing is with Jack is literally, he's carved it up for Leinster for four years. And he probably hasn't got the love that he should have with Ireland, really. I think that, you know, they've gone with CJ and he's done, you know, brilliantly well for them. And, yeah, I think, you know, Jack has fallen on the wrong side of selection a few times, and I hope over these next few games he gets an opportunity anyway.
Yeah, so other talking points, you know, I suppose we've spoken about the men's Six Nations, and I suppose I have to mention the women's Six Nations coming up, and we are very excited as well. Our game is on Saturday at the weekend, playing against Italy too. So I suppose we can't forget about the women in that stage.
Absolutely
too. And
you guys
currently being in camp.
You guys are 2 from 3 as well.
We are up to date on your women's knowledge. This is great.
we had to after the first day, the dry run we did.
Exactly.
We're
caught you rotten.
Stats about the women.
Caught you rotten. You've Googled all the women's names since, which is great to hear.
Yeah.
Look, we're just in camp. We've had a really good few weekends of camp. You know, we're lucky that, well, we had a few injuries at the start of the season, but we have, you know, some really good players back in. We've got Claire Molloy back in, who is like a phenomenal player to be able to bring in through some girls getting injured. But going really well. We're so excited for it. You know, this weekend especially, it was so competitive. I suppose knowing that it's your first game in 6 months as well that you haven't played. And it's actually bizarre to think that our first game in 6 months is going to be an international game. We've had no friendlies, we've had no club games, we've had no interpros. So it is bizarre thinking, you know, God, can I even tackle? Do I remember how to do this? And, you know, you can train all you want, but the intensity of a match is completely different to
Yeah, I remember last week. When we were talking about it, you were saying that you've got a very strong chance of being captain. How's that going?
I don't think Keira Griffin would be too happy about that to hear. But you know, the way this year is going, you never know what's going to happen. But I wouldn't, if you're a betting man, I wouldn't throw all your money on it for sure. Okay. But no, look, we're very excited. I know you talk about the strangeness of not having a crowd, and equally, it'll be strange for us too, not having the crowd over in Energia Park. You know, it'll be a really weird sensation. Like, I remember I watched the Guinness Pro 14 final pitch side, and you know, you can hear everything, and it's probably even stranger for you guys not having the crowd there. And I think what opened up my eyes as well to was, like, you can see the leaders on the field, you can hear everything, you can hear the leaders. And I suppose going back to the Zurich Player of the Year awards, like you just mentioned, Gary Ringrose, I think deservingly so, got that Player of the Year award. You know, from just personally, like, I obviously wouldn't know him the way you know him, only from watching him from a distance, but from watching that day, you can hear he's not just a leader in what he does with the ball in hand. He's such a leader in everything around it. And I think not having the crowd that day opened up my eyes, and I think a lot of the commentators' eyes too, to just like how valuable he is to the squad.
Yeah, geez, I was delighted to see him get given that accolade yesterday, because he's been incredible. And, you know, over the past few seasons, he's always been incredible, Gary, really, to be honest, since he's broken through. But he's picked up injuries at the wrong times. But this season, he's had a pretty clean bill of health. And, he's just been unbelievable. You know, I'd like to think if he continues playing like this, he'd be one of the first boarding passes to head over to South Africa for the Lions. And delighted for him that he won that Player of the Year.
Absolutely. Like, I remember him breaking through, I think it was Matt O'Connor's last year. He was really pushing hard to get in, and he was an absolute nightmare when he was training against us, because he'd be carving us up. And then when Leo and Gerv took over, his career just took off. And, you know, he was probably
skinning me on the wing when I was already lost.
Giving us all nightmares.
A yard of pace.
Yeah, but I remember looking at him, and it was literally every week he'd be carving us up, and you're going, you know, there's always a small bit of a doubt. You're kind of going, will it transfer across to games for him? And literally from cap one, once he got his chance, he never looked back. And now he's just a quality player, and even better guy.
Yeah, I think it's going to be, you know, and he did win Player of the Year, but the competition even in the centre is unbelievable for Ireland at the moment, because, you know, the way Bundy Aki's been playing for Connacht, and then Robbie Henshaw's been right up there with Gary all year, how well he's played, and they obviously played together in Leinster, so they have probably, you could argue, that better cohesion on a weekly and monthly basis, because they're with each other the whole time. And then Stuart McCluskey's playing some of the best rugby he's ever played. So
Stu's been fantastic for Ulster. You know, he's arguably probably their Player of the Year last year, you know, with John Cooney, and you know, is at the centre of everything that they do. And I think the coaches, the Irish coaches, will be fully aware that he can offer probably something slightly different to, you know, the likes of Gary and Robbie and even Bundy. But look, it'll be interesting to see what they go with now next week.
Yeah.
And we finish out our show by inducting our very first member into the Guinness House of Rugby Hall of Fame tonight. During the week, we asked our viewers and our listeners on the Twitter and Facebook pages to write in who they would love to see as a guest on our House of Rugby show. There are some amazing suggestions, some difficult, I think, tasks for Pat to try and get his hands with these people. Some of the responses were people like John Muldoon, Will Addison, Dan Carter, Bevan Parsons and Joe Biden all mentioned. So I think Pat is going to have a really difficult job getting his hands on some of those people. They were all really great names. However, the one that jumped out at us, and I think as a proud Munster woman, the winner of coming into the Guinness House of Rugby Hall of Fame is Dave Welton. He wants to see Simon Zebo on. What would you think about that, lads?
Yeah, it'd be great.
Thumbs up. Yeah, be a
big
great
fan
guest.
Of Simon.
Great guest.
I thought Zeebs was fantastic last night as well. It was great to see him carving up for Racing, two fantastic tries. And I think generally he had a great game. You know, unbelievable under the high ball, and everything he touched kind of came off. And that was great to see.
I think he'd be a great guest for us as well, because we both played with him at Ireland. And did you play with him at underage as well?
Yeah, I think he was a year ahead of me, but yeah, played against him in the underage stuff. And Yeah, he'd be good fun as well.
And I would love to see him on as a proud Munster woman. And the question that Dave asked him was, when are you coming back to Munster? A question I would love to ask him myself. So for next week, what we want you to do as viewers, your task is to send us your home setup ahead of the Guinness Six Nations game against Italy. So send them in into the House of Rugby page and we will love to see your setup ahead of the game. That's it for today. Thank you so much for listening and for watching into the very first episode of Season 3's Guinness House of Rugby with us. A big thank you to producer Pat, Colm, Dermot, Paddy, Anthony and everyone that helped to get the show up and running today. It wasn't as easy, the fact that we were doing through Zoom, but I suppose that's the life that we are living in at the moment. A big thank you to the lads as well, Ferg and Ian, for coming on and having chats with us here. And that's it for today. Slán fó.
House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe, together with Guinness. Game changed.